thunder, thunder, thunder,
thunder,
wear.
Thunder wear.
Do you like thunder?
If so, you'll love my thunder wear.
Does that good thunder sound?
Yeah. This is a great promo for our new. We don't get the name brand podcast advertisers like MeUndies. We get Thunderwear.
They're like those thunder vests, but for your crotch. In case your crotch gets a little scared when it's thundering.
It does. It crawls up inside.
It's the only way I can orgasm.
I am Philip.
I am Matt.
First we'll have a little chat.
Then put on our ring brothers.
Now it's time for Next at Bat.
And we're here today with Pat Sussmilch.
Hello.
Local stand-up comedian, but also national stand-up comedian.
Yeah. National. Yeah. All across the country.
Yeah. From coast to coast.
Coast to coast. Not a lot in between.
North to south?
Not north to south.
No.
Mostly just north.
Mostly north.
Yeah.
But you have played both coasts.
I have played both coasts.
So there's that.
Yeah.
So you are a coast-to-coast comedian.
I am coast. I'm coast and coast, not coast-to-coast.
Bi-coastal.
Bi-coastal.
There you go.
Yeah.
And so before we get too bitty, as always, I am joined today by...
Philip Simondet, who's right in the middle. And your host, as always...
It's Matt McLeod. I have no idea what the fuck you mean by either. That, Philip.
I don't. I was stretching so hard.
That's really.
You introed him and then you introed him for your intro. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
It's real alt.
Oh, boy. We're coming for Drew Yonda and Alex Collier's title.
Yeah. Eat it, you dicks.
Yeah. They should. They're both skinny.
Yeah. They need to eat some dicks, get some meat on their bones.
Yeah. So, Pat, thank you for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I met you just a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a real fun show, and we got to talking about, you know, comedy and stand up and improv and some of the differences and it was a real fun conversation, so I really wanted to have you on here. Plus, you're from here, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm from White Bear Lake.
From White Bear Lake.
Yeah,
that's something. but to have comedians coming out of the Twin Cities and to make it big enough to be able to go to, say, New York, LA and stuff like that and be able to play, which, you know, recently you did have a pretty big show in LA. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Where did you play?
Last time I was in LA was a couple weeks ago. I did the Meltdown with Jonah Kamel. That's a big one. Mm-hmm. Put Your Hands Together. It's hosted by Cameron Esposito and Rhea Butcher.
Mm-hmm.
I did a show at, it's called Fresh Out LA, and that was at the UCB Sunset, which was real fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a competitive erotic fan fiction.
What?
Yeah. It's a competitive show where you read some erotic fan fiction.
Hilariously?
That you write? Okay.
And it's pretty great.
What? Really?
It's pretty great. There's two rounds. The first round is people that come with prepared material.
Okay.
And before they do that, there's like there's other comedians and they get like they draw from hats like things to write erotic fan fiction about, and they
were
have
you,
like an
were you
hour.
The second one?
I was the first one.
Oh, you were the first one. Okay.
I do not have what it takes for that second round yet. Okay. All those people were like writers for like Conan and stuff.
Okay.
And so it's a podcast. I look it up. I don't know where it is. You can look up mine. Search my name plus competitive erotic fan fiction, and you'll find it.
What did you write about out of curiosity?
I actually wrote about the Mars Curiosity rover.
Sexy.
Yeah.
Sexy.
It was a real bodice ripper, if I do say so myself.
Was it a by Curiosity rover?
No. Well, no. I don't think Curiosity rover has a gender, but didn't flesh that character out as much as I could have, I think, you know?
Sure. Right. But it was a solo adventure.
No, there's other people. Just go listen. It's real, real erotic. Don't listen at work or anything. Or if you do, make sure you have like a coat or something you can put over your lap.
As I was getting to, there are a lot of stand-ups there in the Twin Cities area, but there aren't a ton that make it big enough to be able to go places like New York and LA and be able to play.
Yeah.
Is that true? What's the pathway for a stand-up to be able to get big enough to be able to play shows like that?
Oh, geez. Well, everyone's got their own path.
Sure. Yeah, I suppose there's no set thing, is there?
Yeah, I would. If I was going to give like advice, I would say like set aside time every day to like write or work on material.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the biggest advice, like be polite, be friendly, like be nice to your peers, because there's a lot of. I met a lot of like new stand-up comedians that are kind of dicks to everyone, and it's just not a good way to go. Like the best way you're gonna get stuff is from your like peers and people slightly above you.
Mm-hmm.
So just like be cool with them. Like how I got Last Comic Standing was I was just doing a show at Acme. Mm-hmm. Wendy Liebman was the headliner, and she just liked me, and we were kind of friendly. And she's like, "Hey, do you want to be on Last Comic Standing? My friend's the executive producer," and I was like. At the time, this was a year ago, where the show hadn't been on for like years, and I was like, no, I don't want to be on that show, because I thought she was just messing with me. And then she's like, no, really, it's going to happen. I was like, oh yeah, you should put my name in there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just be nice to people.
And stand-up does have the reputation of a bunch of kind of loners who are a little antisocial and maybe a little depressed or whatever.
A little depressed.
And do you think that plays into that, or why some of the younger stand-ups coming in kind of embrace that aspect and maybe play it probably a little too hard?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I was real quiet. I didn't really talk to anyone like the first few years. I would just come to like open mics or shows and just sit quietly in a corner. And then when my name was called, I'd go do jokes and then leave. And apparently people liked that about me. So,
sure.
I don't know. Stand-up's weird the way it like encourages dickish behavior. I don't know why it does it. Maybe it's because like we've all got our own neuroses. I'm sure right. Improv people have their own kind of.
Oh, hell yeah.
Problems that I don't know what they are yet. I'm hoping to discover them as I go on my improv journey. But I just think something about stand-up, like the way you can just, it's such an ego-driven art form. Yeah. Whereas like it's, you explore like yourself and your own interpretation of the world. Whereas like improv seems to be more, and this is just relational.
Yeah, it's collaborative.
It's if I'm doing stand-up, it's really more like pointing out everything that's wrong with whatever's going on, whereas improv seems to be more like, we're both doing this, and we're here. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. But, you know, in both of the cases, you do have people who, there's something about them that makes them want to get up in front of other people.
Right, yeah.
Which does seem kind of counter to what most people want to do.
Yeah.
What do you think that drive is? Like, where do you think it comes from for you? I mean, we don't need to talk about people in general, but for yourself, when, like, I don't know, we don't necessarily need your origin story. Like,
yeah.
Four 4 years old and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But.
I don't know. I just, in high school, I was on student council, and whenever they needed someone to like host an event or something, I was like, oh yeah, I'll do that. That sounds fun. Or like doing like projects. I had fun. I don't know why I enjoyed it, because it's odd. I have like bad social anxiety when I'm talking to people one-on-one or small groups, but suddenly you get like 30 people, 100 people, 1,000 people in an audience listening to me. I'm like, this is great. This is exactly what I want.
And right.
I don't, maybe it's because they're not allowed to talk back, so I can just say whatever I want to them.
You know, Harry Shearer, obviously, you know Harry Shearer is. Harry Shearer, I think I've quoted this on the show before, and I'm probably misquoting him, but it's close.
Who cares?
Yeah. He said... that comedians become comedians because they want to control how and when people laugh at them.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's some truth to that?
I would say there's some truth to that. I know in like middle school I got picked on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point I kind of said something that like made people laugh. Mm-hmm. And you kind of was like, oh, I like this. And it is like a control thing,
yeah.
I think that's actually an excellent quote.
We had talked before, and you told me that a lot of I know that a lot of stand-ups pull the building a fictitious life for themselves, and not a lot. Some stand-ups do that. And talking about, you know, whether or not these things have actually happened to them, it, or whether it's just a hilarious premise that they came up with. But you told me that all of the stories that you tell, all of the jokes that you tell are based on actual things.
Yeah, it's all actual. It's all actual things that happened to me. I've, when I watch someone performing and they're telling like stories, you can kind of, you like know, or you're like, that didn't happen. You didn't say that. Like you can kind of, you can kind of tell. And I think the audience can tell too. Like even if it's funny, they'll like laugh, but I don't, it's like they don't connect with it. Sure. I think that's the most important thing for stand-up is to be like likable. Like people can like connect with you. It's kind of, it's hard to explain, but it's, yeah, I would say because people can tell when you're being dishonest and it's a little less interesting for people.
When writers write memoirs, I always kind of think about, well, why the fuck is this person's life interesting? Why would I want to read a 400-page book about this person's life? Like, it takes a certain type of person to think that I know that people are going to want to know about me. And, and I think that there's some element of that that goes into improv, stand-up, comedians in general. And I think that there is some truth to that. Like, audience's bullshit meter is incredibly fine-tuned, whether they know it or not.
I think especially nowadays, because there's just, there's comedy everywhere.
Yeah.
There's like, if people just want like one-liner jokes, they can go to Twitter or like Tumblr or whatever, or TV, like to actually go to an actual physical place and watch a real person in the same room with you. I think they want like more, they want more earnestness necessarily than like 100 laughs per minute or something, you know? Because if they want just laughs, they can just stay at home, honestly.
And do you think that that's why audiences are much more willing to go on whatever ride you want to take them on, whether it's happy, sad, angsty, frustrating, uncomfortable, all of those things? They're willing to take all of those trips with you?
Yeah, it's audiences, they aren't always necessarily on board for everything you do.
Okay.
But and this is only something I've just now been like learning, is like when an audience can tell that like this is going to happen no matter what, they get like way on board. But if they can tell that you're nervous about the material or something, because like I know there's like a lot of new people, they start out and they're like, I'm going to be as shocking as possible, and audiences see that and they're like, we know this isn't really who you are, we know what this is. So I think, and I'm not even sure if I'm answering this the question you asked me anymore,
sorry,
I think there's a point like years after years of doing stand-up that every comedian, when they finally make it to the next level, is when you first start out, a lot of what you're doing is to get validation from the audience. And you reach a certain point, and I think this is where like you really start to become an artist about it. It's like a, it's like a self-validation kind of thing. And when you like reach that point is when you can like talk about anything, and like an audience will go along with you because they're like, this is, he or she needs to talk about this, and we're here. And it's that's like when it becomes like that really magical next level stuff.
Is the fear gone at that point?
It's not so much that the fear is gone. Like even after 8.5, almost 9 years of stand up, I still get nervous before every show. But it's not so much a fear. It's kind of like you get this attitude where you're like, you know what? It doesn't matter. Like after hundreds of shows, you realize this audience doesn't like you. It doesn't matter because tomorrow there's going to be another audience. And you kind of stop caring. And that's when you start like taking more risks. And when you're taking risks, a lot of times the audience doesn't go along. But when they do, you're like, oh, this new thing, this is really something that no one else is doing.
Sure. So is it sort of like performing for yourself instead of performing for the audience? Like that?
It does almost reach a point where you're performing almost for yourself. It's still, I always considered it a collaboration between you and the audience, but you do get a lot more of your own self in it. And if an audience doesn't laugh, you also get more comfortable with the audience not laughing, which is important for like setting things up.
Sure.
Because you can go for like, you can watch like in like a nationally touring headliner that's been on TV, they'll sometimes go for like minutes without getting a laugh, and it takes a lot of confidence to be able to do that.
Yeah, Birbiglia. is one that I kind of admire for that. Like, he'll dive into stories that he can't pull out of. Mm-hmm. So they better fucking work.
Right.
And he will go minutes without a punchline.
I was given advice years ago that basically was saying, if you can't be funny, at least be interesting. Yeah. And I think that's great advice.
Yeah. I mean, I guess kind of where I'm kind of working this out, and I don't have any conclusions, but that when you're up there and you, the audience can see that you just kind of need to do this, mm-hmm. that this is something that you need to do right now. It's maybe kind of finding that right balance between doing it for yourself and doing it for the audience. Do you think that there's something that they will the audience will accept more about that than a comedian who panders to the audience? Like, maybe panders isn't the right word.
But no, I kind of know what you mean.
You kind of know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a lot of, the term that we use, the disparaging term, would be like road hack. And that's a lot more like pandering stuff, a lot more like just kind of talking to people or like local references.
Sure.
Like, it's okay. Yeah, like, you want to throw in a couple local references just to show like you're aware of where you are.
Know where you are.
People like to know like you're not just completely just spaced out.
Sure.
But I think for pandering, that can get you to a certain level. But after that, the people that you really want to go after, the people that you really want to impress to like get those more important gigs, they're the more, I would call them comedy literate, where they listen to a lot of podcasts or they watch a lot of shows, and they kind of they know when you're just like pandering to them, and they don't want to be pandered to. They want to know what you've got to say. They want to be taken on a journey.
Sure.
Kind of like I was going to talk about Jurassic World, but haven't seen it. Just because of Jurassic World, they like reference the first movie like too many times, to the point where I was like, okay, I get it. Like, sure. They kept referencing the first movie. It's like, okay, I get it. Like, I know you're not the first, like, okay. But like, people like in the audience that I was watching with were like, oh my God, they mentioned the first movie again. That's so awesome. So what I'm saying is that you can also pander and be the biggest opening movie of all time. So
sure.
Don't listen to me.
It doesn't mean you're good.
But I guess you could still make money.
Sure.
Well, depends what you want.
Gallagher
licenses out his act.
In terms of like your what is your writing process? Do you treat it like a job and sit down and write, or
I do?
Is it just as it strikes you? How does it work?
Well, when I first started, for the first couple of years, I had this like overwhelming urge, like I gotta write these jokes, I gotta tell my story. So it was just like all the time, it was in the back of my mind, like, oh my God, could this be funny or whatever? And after years, when it becomes like basically your job, you kind of lose that magic and that spark.
Sure.
And for a couple of years, I wasn't really writing new material, but so now what I do is I actually have like several hours a day blocked off for writing, where I just go to the library with some notebooks and like a book and just kind of work on stuff. It's I would say my writing process is like, I'll come up with like a funny idea or like something funny happened to me. I'll like, in a notebook, I like write out a lot of like bullet points. So like, these could be funny things on this topic. And then I go on a stage at like an open mic and just kind of talk through it and try and hit those bullet points. And I do that for months and kind of edit out all the chaff until it becomes like a decent joke.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you remember, I have that like 3-minute joke on catheters that I think I told.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That joke used to be like 10 minutes of me rambling about catheters until I was able to find the 3 decent minutes in it.
Really?
Yeah.
It's 3 good minutes.
It used to be a lot longer.
Like a good catheter.
Like the best catheters.
Yes. So when you're writing, do you think about that? Does it enter your mind, the whole idea of like taking an audience on a journey? Or is it more like, does this joke work?
For me, it's basically, do I think this is funny? And then I will, and almost always, yes. And then you go to an open mic and you work on it. And sometimes, a lot of times, I would say like 80% of the time, the audience does not like it at all. And you can try and like force it, or you got to just give up at some point.
Sure.
And I think giving up is the hallmark of people that are like a lot better
at
stand-up, when you're willing to just say this isn't working and move on. Because it's real easy to get like, no, I like this. I'm going to make it work. But then you'll just be pushing a joke that just no one likes for months.
And I'm betting you see that happen. I'm betting you've probably done it.
Oh, yeah. It's just something you do when you're first starting out before you just get used to it. But yeah, I see a lot of younger comics, a lot of older ones too, where they'll just kind of like keep telling a joke. Part of it, especially after Louis C.K. coming out with like a new hour every year, is we kind of all have this weird like feeling like we need to be coming up with a constant new hour every year. It's like, we're not Louis C.K. We haven't been doing it 25 years.
Right. A ton of material. Like, you and I were, again, we were talking after the show last week, and you said you have a solid 45.
Yeah, 45 that I'm proud of.
Yeah, 45 that you're proud of. You have more, yeah, but
I have more.
To come up with an hour every year.
Right. Jesus. It's I can't imagine it. I'm sure after 20 plus years, it's a lot easier to come up with a new joke.
Yeah.
But right now, it's still a lot of just stumbling around in the dark.
Mm-hmm. Does your stuff get very personal? Because I noticed that a lot of your the stuff that you were talking about last week was pretty absurd. Like, you were finding absurdity in like kind of minutia, like small veins.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. That was a great bit, by the way.
Thank you.
And do you like to find the off kilter stuff, or what do you like to do?
I don't know. I think part of it is just my natural brain's anxiety blows everything out of proportion. Sure. So it's very easy for me to take something where like a nurse not wanting to get blood plasma from me because my veins are too small, and exploding that into like a very deep personal insult.
Yeah, like you took it personally.
Yeah,
and then you blow it up into a joke. Like you take it to the extreme, like absurd extreme.
It's a very, very warped rendition of reality.
Mm-hmm. Seems like that's a pretty good formula for joke writing.
Oh, well, I hope so.
Yeah.
That's all I got right now. As far as going, I don't know. I feel like they're all personal. A lot more of it recently is more about me and my life. Yeah, I don't know. It's like personal. It's things I've experienced. So I guess, I don't know. What do you mean by personal? Like, I guess I'm not.
I guess that's, well, again, you talked earlier about, you know, seeing that stand up on stage, needing to get this out.
Yeah.
And I can see how, you know, at its core, on the surface, like the jokes about small veins are jokes.
Yeah.
They're very surface level. But when you talk about kind of the origins of it and it being built off of like anxiety and blowing things up in your head, like that is its rejection.
It is. Yeah. It's rejection. And the full story of that vein thing is like, I went in months before that and they were like, yeah, just give us your social security number or whatever, like on like a pay stub or something. And I gave one, but it said like tax ID, and they're like, oh, you can't give blood. It doesn't say social security number. And I was like, well, can I swear?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, well, fuck you. And like, I didn't really care that much, but now I was like, I'm going to fucking sell goddamn plasma to you motherfuckers. And like, was able to like cobble together some stuff and like a birth certificate, and went down again months later. And I was like, here I am. Are you ready for this plasma?
Yeah. It's going to shoot all in your face.
Yeah. And like, they were like, cool, whatever. And like, filled out all this paperwork. They make you like read this like pledge. I forgot what it was, but like, they make you read a thing into like a voice recorder.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Cause I guess they're worried. Like, the government's like, I guess selling parts of your body, we should regulate this pretty heavily. So that there isn't someone out there just plasma jacking people when they're out on the street. Like, did that and like filled out all this stuff, and they're like, all right, time to do a vein check. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, just hold out your arms. And I like held out my arms, and like this woman like side eyed and was like, nah. And was like, all right, you can go. Like, I was like, what? And like, your vein's too small. And
what?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Jesus.
After I'd been there like an hour and a half, and then she was like, oh no, try again in like 3 months. And that's what I was like.
Then that's where
because my veins will just get bigger. Yeah, I'm 28. My veins, I'm like, I'm not done growing my veins. And then she did make a little like note in the computer, and then was like, you can go now.
Yeah.
And I was like,
put up your picture.
Okay. And that was actually like the day before my episode of Last Comic Standing aired. And I was like, this is, wonder if people, when they see someone on TV, wonder if this is their life. Probably think things are going great. No, it's just me because I got a coupon. I was like, normally it's $20 to sell plasma, but if you have this coupon, it's $100. And I was like, I like that. I like coupons when it comes to selling parts of my body.
That's kind of what I meant by personal. Like, you tie it back to things that, you know, you're kind of working through also.
Yeah, it's definitely working through stuff. Sometimes I tell things that are too personal. Like, if it involves like a woman that I was like broke up with, like I had a woman break up with me a few months ago that was just, it was just real stupid because she had to move to San Diego, and we tried to make it work, but it didn't work. And she broke up with me via Skype, and we had like this 4-hour long, like sad breakup thing because like we didn't want to do it, but we're both like, this makes sense. And then at the end, she's like, oh, by the way, I made out with this dude like an hour before breaking up with you. And I'm like, well, why not lead with that so we don't have to have this 4-hour conversation?
Yeah, she could have narrowed that 4-hour conversation down. Yeah, this was like funniest 1 minute.
Yeah, this was like the day that Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt came out. I had like real big plans to watch some of that. could have watched that. Would have been great. And then I cyberstalked the guy, and he's got this really lame blog called like singlesteve.com. And I was like, oh, it's like a dating blog, and he had like a thing that was like, submit your dating horror stories, and I like almost sent something. I'm like, well, Single Steve, do I have a story for you? But I didn't, because I was like, that's just kind of dickish. Yeah. But like, I talked about this on stage one time, and I was like, I don't know if I can, I shouldn't do this, so I only did it once, but I have it recorded on video, and it's, the audience really loved it.
There is nothing against our audience submitting things to Single Steve's website.
Are you making a call to action?
As long as you do it like ironically, I don't want to accidentally get him more traffic.
Yes.
Yeah. He's got more Twitter followers than me, and that like really hurt me. I was like, ugh.
Ugh.
I gotta get, he's got like 12,000.
Wow.
I've only got like 850.
And all he does is curate sad breakup stories?
12,000 or
12,000.
Jesus.
Yeah. I was like, ugh. God damn it, Single Steve. I can't compete with that. You're not even a real person until you get at least 1,000 Twitter followers. Wow. Those are the rules, right?
Something like that. We don't have a Twitter, so.
What?
We're not real people.
No, I've never have been.
Oh, well, then it makes sense.
Facebook, though.
Ooh. Facebook, it pendulums between Twitter and Facebook. Mm. Twitter used to be the huge one. Now it's no one really cares about Twitter anymore. It's pretty much all stratified. No one's following anyone now. Like, no new followers, so no one cares about Twitter anymore, so good work. You got to get on that Periscope.
I've heard of it. Remind me what it is.
It's like it's a live streaming thing. So you just be like, hey, guys, I'm going to Periscope walking my dog, and then people tune in because they got nothing better to do.
Oh, God.
And they can ask you questions.
Oh, boy.
So we could be Periscoping this right now.
Ugh.
So you recently went back to start doing some improv stuff.
Yeah.
Tell me how that's going.
It's going well. I think I'd be better at it if I just started improv, but after doing stand up for so long, I have like natural urges to like, I try so hard not to, but sometimes I'll just like sacrifice a scene for like a quick joke. And I know that's like the worst thing. That's, you can do.
It's not the worst thing, but yeah.
It's a dick move.
Yeah, it's kind of a dick move.
And like, but I try real hard not to.
Yeah.
And like, I'll be like sitting on like the back wall and like stuff will be going on and I'll like think too much. I'll be like, okay, I could do this. And then they'd probably do this. And then by the time, like, oh, and then like someone else just stepped up and I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. I still like want to think through things too much, which I guess is not how you do improv.
yes, you're correct.
Okay. So. That's been my problem.
But you're enjoying it?
I'm enjoying it. It's fun. Everyone's super nice. Like I was telling you guys before the show, like first improv class I took, everyone was nice. And I was like, I was so used to like stand up. I was like, what the fuck? What do you want from me? What's your game? And then after like a month, I was like, oh, they're just happy. They're just comfortable with who they are.
It's new.
This is a new experience for me. No one's trying to fuck anyone over for no reason. This is crazy. I don't understand.
Yeah, for no reason.
Yeah.
There's a lot, and from what I understand from my stand-up friends, a lot of the time people are unnecessarily standoffish to each other in the stand-up world.
Yeah.
even with nothing to gain from it.
No, nothing, everything to lose and nothing to gain.
Yeah.
It's like, just who cares? Just chill out.
In the stand-up world, improv, like what excites you most about comedy right now?
What excites me most about comedy? I've been doing a lot more writing, which is really fun.
That's great.
Like sketches and like a web series. And it's fun. I found that improv has really helped with my ability to write, especially sketches. Because before it was just like words on a page and I didn't understand like how people would react to things. And just doing improv, like I can understand how like a game can like be bounced back and forth and heightened. And it's really informed my writing. And I think that's why pretty much every sketch writer has an improv background.
Speaking of somebody who does have a sketch and improv background, I didn't have a funny transition.
God, we're sucking it so bad.
Yeah. Well,
you guys are doing all right. Come on.
Speaking of somebody who's doing all right, God, that's terrible. Now's the time of the show where I throw the microphone over to Philip Simondet for a brand new segment that we call Philip's Corner. It's Philip's Corner.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, welcome to Philip's Corner. This
it's great
is,
to be here.
This is the new morning show version of, it's a new segment we're going to try out. This is what we're going to do. I'm going to stare at you.
Cool.
We're going to make eye contact.
Cool.
I'm going to come up with a question.
All right.
And it's not going to be good because...
Well, don't... Come on.
It's not.
You're Pat. Setting the expectation for it to not be good.
Pat, it's going
to
be from nowhere, for nothing. It's probably going to be like a dumb like yes or no answer, and you're just going to answer and be like, okay. But even though it's going to be a terrible question,
is this how you set it up every week?
It's a new segment.
Okay. Have some confidence. At least pretend like you believe in this segment.
Your answer is going to be so amazing. Just so interesting. You're going to pull so much details from your personal life and illuminate them for us that it's going to make my question retroactively seem like a good idea.
That's a lot of pressure.
Oh, no pressure. No. All right. Pat.
Yes, I'm going to take this mic out for now.
Do you hold babies often?
No, I do not hold babies very often. I'm very terrified of holding babies. When my nephew was born, I refused to hold him.
Wait, you literally refused?
Yeah, they're like, you want to hold him? And I was like, no, I'm good. Because I drop my phone all the time. Like, how am I going to, like, I don't know, man. Babies, they're wiggly. They're squirmy. Their bones haven't finished forming. You don't want me touching that.
Is the baby grown out of holding age now? Did you miss that window?
I missed that window. He's about 2.5 now. I can still pick him. Now I pick him. Now I don't like pick him up because I'm like, if I drop him, whatever. He's not new anymore. Kind of like once you have a phone for like a couple of years, you kind of get real. you get real loose with the rules there. You're like, whatever. I'll hold it with just two fingers.
Toss it up in the air. Juggle.
Yeah. Yeah, you do some flourishes with your text messaging. You do a little over-the-head back catch kind of thing. It's pretty. So, yeah, that's what I do now.
And you do all of those things with your toddler nephew.
Yeah, I just toss them around.
Tossed salads. Do you like them? Wait, what makes a salad tossed? Is it a whole, like, bond shaken, not shirt stirred thing?
Wait, can you say that again?
Shirkin?
Is it a whole bond shaken, not stirred thing? Like, why is tossed part of that? Like, does it have to be tossed to taste good?
I've sometimes, yes.
I know the answer.
Ooh, well,
okay,
we'll
see.
Okay,
we're going to hear the wrong answer first, and then we'll find out.
I've occasionally had salads where, like, everything's just, like, on top. Like, there's, like, layers of things, and it's like, do it yourself, and I don't want to.
So they're, like, self-toss.
Yeah, salads. Like, everything's not evenly distributed. And I guess some people are into that. They're like control freaks, and they need to be able to properly do their own salad.
Do you think there's people that like eat, though they don't mix it, and they're just like, I'm going to eat all of the cucumbers first, and now I'm going to eat the baby tomatoes?
I'll sometimes do that. If I'm doing a show, and I've got get like food beforehand, and I got nothing else to do, I'll do that just out of boredom.
Just eat methodically.
Yeah, I'll be like, all right, cucumbers, you're up. What you got?
What do you say for last?
Usually the lettuce. So I just eat a real big old bowl of lettuce by the end.
I want to imagine that you do that, but then your last thing is just drinking the dressing.
Yeah, and then I just do a ranch shot. Ranch.
Side question, Matt, yes. why is toss salad a thing?
It means that you evenly distribute the dressing throughout the salad by using usually salad tines.
Sure.
Tines, not tongs?
No, they're it's like a...
Is it like the spoon that's like with holes and then one's like a spoon that's almost a fork, but yes, they're big for
like,
salad?
Yes, like those. That's what it is. So whatever's in the salad gets tossed with the dressing.
Okay. So it's about the dressing distribution.
That's exactly correct.
How about cracked pepper? You like that on your salads, guys?
Generally, yes.
I don't that seems like a restaurant salad thing, and yeah. I don't get salad at restaurant usually.
He doesn't deserve to be in public.
I'm not. Save your salad eating for home.
Allowed. Yeah, well, I eat salads weird, you guys.
Tell us more.
See, what I do is when I have a salad, I won't toss it. Mm-hmm. I'll make little salad burritos. Each leaf of lettuce I'll hold in my hand, and then I'll put a little, smear a little dressing on. I'll put a little of cheese and a little sliver of carrot. Mm-hmm. I'll put some, cherry tomatoes. I might have a crouton. And then I just wrap it up in the lettuce, and then I make them all beforehand because I
okay. What the fuck, are you serious?
And so then I just have a whole bowl full of little baby salad burritos, and then I eat them like burritos. Yeah,
I'm into that, honestly. Like, if you ate that at a restaurant here, people think you're crazy, but if you went to like New York or LA, you would start something.
Oh yeah,
you would start a craze. You need to move.
Yeah, well, I mean, they won't let me do it here. I've been banned, so I better move.
Sir, please stop. You can't do that here.
Yeah, they're like, this is a salad. This is not veggie burrito.
Sir, this is a family restaurant. We're going to have to ask you to stop manhandling the salad.
And they find him a little bit off-putting to begin with.
Pat, have you ever been kicked out of anywhere?
Have I ever been kicked out of anywhere? No, I've never been kicked out of anywhere.
Great. That has been Phillip's Corner.
Two of those questions were really, really thought-provoking. That last one.
That's a very high percentage for me. Yeah. 2 out of 3.
2 out of 3 ain't bad, Meatloaf.
Next at bat!
Is this cool that I'm just asking you guys questions? Because I've got so many questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if can we find a way to squeeze this in? Cool for the podcast?
Yeah, absolutely.
I find it interesting. Because
you have to name the segment, and then we'll put it in.
Yeah.
What segment is this?
What's it called?
This segment is called Pat's Corner.
Yes. It's a long-established segment that we do every week.
Yeah. Yep.
We've been wanting to get Pat's Corner greenlit for a long time, but the producers are being total dickholes about it.
Yeah, they're being real hard-asses about it.
Ugh. Those guys.
Such dicks.
All right, go for it.
When you're doing improv, is there any stuff, do you ever have like a plan ahead of time? Like, I kind of want to try this out, or?
Yeah, I mean, you sometimes have things that you want to work on. Like, mm-hmm. Tonight I'm going to try a certain edit, or
like be more, do more physical characters. Yeah. You might have goals like that, but not usually.
Yeah, but never like, I'm going to work in a tiger scene.
Okay.
No, that would never work.
No.
It would never...
It's shoehorning.
Come around.
And that's bad, right?
I wouldn't say bad. It's just limiting.
Yeah.
You're not being flexible with what's happening. It's easier. The thing is, like, a lot of improvisers make it so much harder for themselves than it needs to be.
Yeah.
And if they're willing to risk more, it actually becomes easier.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
So do you agree, Philip?
Well, yeah, it's like you started at UCB and their whole thing, like they set up their premise, they kind of bring their whole thing in that first sentence.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
like everyone play this game I just laid out the map for.
Mm-hmm. But UCB has a different philosophy because they do have the idea of there's a right and wrong way to play a scene. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
And that's kind of like what bringing a pre-existing idea is, where it's,
yeah,
I think it's way more gratifying if there's something in that room that everyone hasn't quite named yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you feel that and you name that, then it's more satisfying for everyone.
Yeah. It's a group discovery all at once, which is pretty fun.
Is this something that you've always done, or like, cause like me just first starting out, I'm so terrified to step out that sometimes I need like a little more. I have like a little bit more of a thought than maybe I'm supposed to.
No,
that's normal.
That's totally normal. And by all means, do that. And then try to push yourself to jump before you have that thought.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll still do that on the back line too.
Sure.
I'll think of like, oh, I just try not to think more than like what my first sentence will be.
Yeah.
As long as you don't think further than that, you're fine. Because like you said, if you're like planning what they should respond, then you're already fucked.
Because you've just missed everything that happened.
Well, and there's no way to plan. You cannot control what another person's going to do. And even if you try to, if you try to make it just right so they have to respond a certain way, then what you're doing is you're robbing that person of their creativity.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But I'll be like, oh, I want to like be a mad scientist. How can I most clearly portray this in my declaration? Like, that kind of planning is fine.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I like to do, I've kind of come back around on this. I just like to state the obvious as much as possible.
Do you have what do you mean?
Yeah, if I'm going to be a mad scientist, the best way I can convey that is say, I'm a mad scientist.
And that's cool? You can do that?
Fuck yeah.
People aren't like, that's not how mad scientists say things. I don't know.
No, you can get away with that.
Yeah, you can totally get away with it.
So it's cool to have like real expository dialogue, like you're in a bad movie and they're like, Philip, my son.
Absolutely. Or as a mad scientist, I might say my want instead of who I am, but I might say like, I want to create my own type of Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah. So it's not, it's like not,
and then all of a sudden the scene could be about like me trying to keep up with the Joneses, and it could be kind of a hilarious it's a mad scientist, but he's really just trying to save face in his mad scientist community or whatever.
Well, you plan too far, you're already fucked.
Man.
Yeah.
Because there's been a few times where like someone, like, what do you do when like someone's pushing a scene towards like something, like you're not comfortable with something?
That's what's called steamrolling. Where they have an agenda, and they really shouldn't do that.
Okay.
The idea is that you're building a scene together, and the idea is that you're taking the idea of yes and is it's bigger than just the words. It's the idea that you're okay with all of the given circumstances that are coming before you.
Okay.
And then the part that you get to control is the and.
Mm-hmm.
And you also get to control the acceptance of everything that comes before you. But the idea is that you do accept. Everybody accepts all of the given circumstances that come before. And then your addition to what's happening is the and part. And that's why making big, bold, interesting things happen is cool, because then you can control as little or as much of that 50% of the scene, if it's a two-person scene, as you want. As soon as you try to control more than 50%, you're impeding on somebody else's creativity.
Yeah.
And the way I put it to my students when I'm teaching is you have every right to as much fun as you want until your fun impedes on somebody else's fun.
Okay, yeah.
And then you no longer have any more rights. So it sounds like that person.
Yeah, there's been times where I guess steamrolling would be a thing. There's also been times where like someone will just like say or do things that I'm just not comfortable with as like a person who I am.
Sure.
And like it's kind of hard because like I understand we're all playing characters, but I'm also like,
is it like controversial
like,
sort of
like
stuff,
stuff? Like controversial things or like maybe saying things that are maybe like homophobic or like transphobic, and I'm like,
sure.
Well, I mean, your character could be have the same views as you and have a very enlightened character literally called them out on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I did that one time, but they like ended up just doubling down on it. And then I was like, oh.
There are a couple of different things that you can do. Well, Philip, what do you think? Before I just start talking.
Yeah.
Well, that was my one response, sure. I guess.
Again, like in teaching, I have to cover this stuff. And what I would say is one of two things. And exactly what Philip said is one, like the thing that you can control is your response. And I would go even further and be as realistic as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
I've had, scenes where people have named me things that I am super uncomfortable with. And then I will play it as strong and as straight, and I will take them to a dark fucking place that they do not want to be. And they have to reckon with that. And generally speaking, it happens once.
I think maybe part of it is like, I'm so used to coming from a place of stand up where when I'm on stage, it's literally me.
Yeah.
So
it's like your control.
But like, it's like me. So like the things I'm saying, like these are things I believe in. So right. I'm used to that. So when someone assigns me something that I'm not comfortable with, I feel like I don't want people to think this is who I am.
And
like,
and here's the flip side. If you're ever playing with somebody, you have the right to say to them, this makes me uncomfortable. I'm not interested in doing these topics.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in a class and it's happening, you should go to the teacher.
Okay.
And the teacher should take care of it. And if for some reason the teacher doesn't, then talk to somebody else. As a teacher, if I ever see any of that stuff happening, I will address it to the entire class, and then I will talk to the individuals separately and find out if people are okay with this or not, because taboo subjects are taboo for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And if everybody in the room is fine with it, then everybody in the room is fine with it, and that's fine. Because it's improv, and sometimes people's brains are going to go to places that are.
Sometimes that first thing that pops in your head, you're like, ugh.
Yeah. Hey, I fucked your mother yesterday.
Ooh.
Oh, well, that's just true life.
Yeah.
So.
No, I was just segueing.
Okay.
Is that how you introduce the next segment?
Yeah.
So I fucked your mom last night. What's in the news?
It's your responsibility to also let people know if it's making you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's their responsibility to change their behavior if that's the case.
Okay, yeah. Because I was just in a situation. I was like, oh, I didn't know this was going to be a situation.
Yeah, it can happen. In every day for you, wasn't it like cunt, 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 cunt?
I literally was in a class where they had an ongoing thing of who could say cunt the most per class. It was awful. It was
I'm not even upset by that, just by the content. I'm upset just by the concept.
The word cunt doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, but the hackiness of it.
Yeah, it's like awful. That's super hack.
Work it in for no reason.
I don't know anything about improv, but I know that's super hack. That's just hack in everyday life or just anything.
For some people, and especially it's like once the muzzle's off, it's like in everyday life, people can't talk like this. In everyday life, people can't explore these things. And so when they're able to finally in a safe place and they're told it's a safe space, all of a sudden it's.
Well, it's more than that. It's worse than that, actually, because it's like those comedians that go up and are, I'm going to be as shocking as possible. Right. You know, it's people new to comedy
thinking
they to be funny, they have to be dirty. Yeah,
I know for a lot of those comedians that start out that way, I think part of it is a fear response, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just be super shocking. And that way, if they don't like me, it's because they don't like I haven't ventured any of myself into this. So if they don't like it.
Or you might get that like startled laugh and they're like, well, that counts.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The scariest thing is silence. So just any reaction for a lot of people is better than none at all.
People can do that stuff with, you know, whether it's actual confidence or pseudo confidence, because they certainly couldn't look another person in the eyes and say, I love you with confidence. But they can roll around on the ground screaming rape.
That was actually, we did that in a class, not the rape thing, but like just like saying like, I love you to like everyone in the class. And I was like, this does feel really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I guess it's a thing where a lot of people, when they first start out, they go towards like ridiculous conflicts every time.
Yeah. Well, it's the fight, flight, or freeze. The brain mechanic of anytime the body's under stress, it immediately flip into fight, flight, or freeze.
I mostly freeze. I'm like a fainting goat.
It's why they're like, especially early improvisers, so many scenes are about fighting or fucking.
I haven't encountered any fucking actually really that much yet.
A lot of people tend towards one or the other.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I could talk about that all day. Not fucking, but
sure.
Improv. Right. So I got so many questions.
The fighting or fucking thing, that's a Lauren Anderson noticing, but she's absolutely right.
Absolutely.
How do you know when you're like achieving that next level improv?
I think there's several levels. What do you think, Phil?
I think there's a lot of plateaus.
Yeah.
I've definitely experienced and heard from other people that like you'll notice like, oh, suddenly like everything makes sense and you're like,
yeah.
Everything is on fire and it's great. And you're like, oh, I'm so much better all of a sudden. And then you'll be at that for a while. And then, you know, and then it'll be like months where you're like, I am no good at this at all anymore. Yeah. I'm back to worse than zero.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then eventually like you hit that next plateau and you're like, oh shit. And then it's always just like,
yeah, that happens a lot in stand up too. Where you're like, I got everything under control. And then you're like, right. I'm so tired of all my jokes. What am I doing? Like everyone's doing better than me. I'm being real sloppy on stage. And then it's like you always reach this point where you kind of break down and then you rebuild it like higher than it was before.
To digress slightly, isn't it a weird thing that stand-ups compare each other to each other?
It is kind of weird, yeah.
Because really, shouldn't it be more like golf where you're really playing against the course and yourself, but not really against other golfers?
Yeah.
Because you're all playing with different material.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think especially as I've been getting further along, the people that are higher up, they're like headlining or like on TV, they really are just more like playing against like themselves or like the course is more what they're about. Because like it doesn't matter. Like the chances of you being like the funniest is like one that's like impossible because that's just, it's not an objective thing.
Right.
You just got to be the best that you can be. Like I go out there and I'm like, I'm going to tell the best jokes that I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I think that's a hallmark of when you're like really doing well. It's like when you reach a point, because like a lot of people are like worried that someone's going to steal their jokes, but you'll eventually like reach a point where like people couldn't steal your jokes because they just wouldn't really fit with anyone else but you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's all insecurity. Everyone's insecure. I'm sure with improv too, it's such like so much ambiguity in the whole thing that there's like no real like benchmarks. So you like, your brain is like, I need something, you like search for like, well, maybe I'm getting these shows or like this person is doing better than me, because it's all just nebulous.
Right.
There's no like straight, like everyone's path to things is different.
Right.
And I don't think the human brain is quite evolved to the point to deal with such a completely ambiguous situation.
Yeah, with non-closure constantly.
Yeah, it's not, you just gotta learn to just throw stuff out there and then like walk away from it.
I will say this, kind of going back to your question, how do you know when you've gotten better, really, I think is basically what you're asking. I think that the big step for me was when I noticed that I stopped thinking about what I'm supposed to be doing. And it just, all of the quote-unquote rules, all of the kind of guidelines of improvisation just were embedded, and I could just play.
Yeah.
And it was like all of those I mean, it's sort of like, you know, when you learn how to play basketball and you finally stop thinking about shooting and you just fucking shoot.
Yeah.
And it's when you hit that feeling, which I think for me took about 2 years, maybe a little bit less. How about you, Philip?
I don't know when that happened. I think a benchmark for me was after a show, realizing that even if I wasn't particularly happy with my performance, realizing that it was still a good show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like knowing that was a big, big benchmark. It was like, oh, even if I'm not doing the best, even my okay is okay enough.
A big benchmark for me was also the first show I ever did at Huge Theater was the worst show I've ever done. It was just awful.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never done a show that has even approached how terrible that show was. And to get that out of the way early and to realize that,
oh yeah,
you know, everybody still lived.
Yeah.
As mortifying as it was, it was still like, that was a good thing.
Yeah. I think, cause I like my first few times on stage with stand-up was just awful. And I think that's important. I see a lot of these newer people when they start out, like people that like kind of do okay their first time usually don't grow as much mm-hmm. as people that just start out like just bombing and having no idea. Because I think helps you lose that fear maybe or something. And you just kind of, you're more willing to experiment and grow. Whereas other people are like, I found this thing that works and I'm afraid to not get laughs.
Right. And just saying yes to every opportunity.
Yeah,
I just started doing that because I wasn't really afraid to. I honestly didn't think that I could possibly do worse than that show.
Yeah,
that's good to have. Yeah,
yeah.
Fuck it.
Yeah, fuck it indeed.
Yeah, I've only ever done one improv show. It was when Sid and Mike asked me to do their thing that they do is at the Bryant Lake Bowl, and it, I did. It was terrible, but I was there like, well, I'm glad I did this because I will never. Can't get worse than this.
Oh yeah, that's right. You didn't do 101 here, so you didn't have a 101 showcase.
I did, but it was in LA, gotcha. Which was strange. One of the people in the audience was a homeless man that one of the students brought. He's a really cool homeless guy, though. He had like his office, which was just a bench at like Sunset and Vine, and apparently he was just like the most mesmerizing guy. He's like this guy in like a suit, but like a suit that he's worn for years and you can tell, but he was just the most compelling, interesting man I've ever, like I felt like I just wanted to buy him stuff. Like we hung out afterwards and I was like, I don't know what it is about. He's like magical. Like, I don't know if you ever heard about this story of this guy, he was a homeless gentleman in San Francisco in like 19th century named Emperor Norton.
No.
Yeah. I actually have heard of that.
Yeah, he was like this this guy that just proclaimed himself the Emperor of the United States, and everyone just kind of went along with it to the point where they started like issuing like currency with his face on it. And like one time he got arrested by like some new upstart cop, and like the police chief was like, no, you can't arrest him, he's the emperor, and then like gave like a formal apology. It was, it's like, it's, that's what that guy was like Emperor Norton of Los Angeles.
You think it was him, like, and he's immortal?
I hope so. I hope so.
He's the last emperor.
Yeah, it was great. That student was, he was a fun guy, but he had some weird stories. He was telling us about how he's doing micro doses of mushrooms to like get over his childhood.
To get over his childhood. Yeah. That is the best phrase.
Yeah, we were practicing like an Armando thing, and that was like the monologue he gave, and we were all just like, keep going.
All right, let's do some improv.
Next up, bats!
Here you go, baby. I brought you some milk for your cookies. I'm sorry that you're not feeling well.
Thanks, Mom.
You just relax, okay? Best thing to do is to just rest. So I got your video games. I had Dad bring the TV up from the living room. I got all your Nintendo is all set up, and here's your cookies. Just let me know when you want your milkshake.
All right, Mom, just get out of here. Jesus.
Okay, I'm just going to tuck you in. It looks like you're coming up around the edges,
Mom,
a little
come
bit.
On.
Okay,
I'm come on, I'm 33
pillow.
Years
fluff,
old.
Fluff your pillow, okay? Do you need anything?
Oh, can you go get me a mom that's maybe a little less overbearing?
How's your bag? Do we need to empty the catheter bag? I'm going to check that here.
Mom,
okay.
Come on.
Okay. Oh,
you
no.
popped it.
My diamond ring swung around and it punctured. It's
God
just
it.
All over. It's spraying all over me. Spraying all over me. Oh, and look at me. I'm
saw
kind of,
that.
I feel like when you were a baby and I would change your diaper, you pee. It's just
Mom,
bringing back memories.
Why don't you just...
We see that Mom's house coat has fallen open and she is now glistening with urine.
Mom, why don't you just step to the side? Just leave.
It's bringing back such fun memories of you as a baby. I bet your penis is bigger now, though. But, well, I know because I put your catheter in. Oh, God.
I shouldn't have drank all that gamer fuel. Oh, Christ. My God. Why? Just move.
Yeah, this is just more pee than when it used to be, when you used to just suck from my breast.
Oh, God, Mom.
When you peed on me before, it was breast milk.
Well, I agree, Thomas. I think that this video of the mom getting peed on is probably the best thing for our Bud Light new commercial campaign.
Up for anything. Up for anything.
Up for absolutely anything.
We can brand it like, how do you MILF this? Okay, brainstorm session. MILF yes. was hot. MILF was hot.
Yeah,
what did we?
I mean,
MILF's so in right now.
MILF is super in. I mean, if we run this in slow motion, we could just in the background just have and twins.
Oh yeah.
What was it? And twins?
And yeah. twins.
Remember our old campaign where we were like, I like these things. And twins.
Oh, no. I live in the now, you guys. I forgot all our past campaigns.
You forgot all of our past campaigns?
Yeah. What about the frogs?
What frog? What are you talking about?
Wiser.
That's brilliant. We should do that.
We've already done it.
Oh, what about?
Damn it. I live in the now. What are you talking about?
Oh, we're saying weather.
Yeah.
What a moment, you guys.
Well, why don't we do that campaign again, then,
I'm up
too.
For anything.
Okay.
In the futuristic year of 2067, one man said no more.
No more, guys. I no longer want to recycle.
But it's good for the earth.
Yeah, I don't want to do it. I am standing up, and if I need to go to jail, like, for a day, like Henry David Thoreau did, I will do it.
I can't even imagine what a kind of a post-apocalyptic future you're envisioning if you're going to stop us from recycling.
I'll tell you what kind. The kind where I don't have to spend at least 5 minutes a week putting recycling out because it's bullshit. And this sort of societal pressure, I am not going to adhere to anymore.
You could switch to a bi-weekly system. Do 10 minutes every other week.
Offering me alternative solutions isn't going to change my mind. This is a philosophical argument, and philosophically speaking, I'm no longer interested in recycling.
This summer, one man stands up for what he believes.
No, Governor Petrie. You can suck my dick.
This bill proposes that all of the recyclables...
Yeah?
Are going to continue to be recycled. And it's going to be a law that I'm passing that my son Robin is going to enact.
Oh, excuse me for just 1 second, if you don't mind.
Are you mock sleeping at me right now?
Yeah, maybe I was.
All right, well, I guess I'll suck your dick.
Coming August 2015, Blue Bin Genocide.
Terry, I am very nervous about performing tonight.
Don't be.
Why?
Because you've been doing this for 30 years, you should be comfortable by now.
I should be comfortable, but the fact of the matter is, I've never actually performed in front of live people before.
They're not that live. You've been hitting this nursing home circuit?
Oh, let me peek behind the curtain and see what they look like.
I want the comedian before I die.
Oh, God, they're going to heckle the shit out of me, Terry.
You can handle this.
If I get heckled, I'm just going to respond with, like, horrible things, and they're old. I could give them heart attacks.
Don't worry. They probably can't even hear you. Especially over the sound of all the respirators that have been going on.
Let me check the curtain again.
We're so anticipating this. We're going to crank our hearing aids all the way up.
Oh, shit.
So, wow.
Did you hear that?
They are ready for this. I didn't know I was that good at promoting.
Oh, man. And there's like 150 of them out there. They're like swarming manimals.
Yeah, they even turned off the TVs in the lobby for this.
Terry... You've been the best manager I could have ever asked for. I just wanted to let you know that if I don't make it back, because I think that there's a strong chance of that I have enjoyed every moment of the last 30 years together.
Oh, jeez.
Oh. Terry, no, come on. Don't come cry.
No, we're going to get through this.
I don't know if I can.
We're going to get through this.
Stand-up is a hard gig. I am up there by myself trying to entertain.
You're not by yourself. You've got me.
Yeah.
Look, you just got to go up there and don't worry about dying on stage, because if anyone's dying, it's that lady in the front row in an iron lung.
Let me check real quick.
This better be better than Murder, She Wrote, because this is the might be the last thing that I see. We want the comedy.
She's comparing me to Angela Lansbury. I'm totally funnier than her.
You're way funnier than Angela Lansbury. You're like twice as funny.
Thanks, Terry.
Go out there.
Here go. I go. It's go my time.
Yeah, yeah, comedy. Yeah.
You can do it, Terry. Tell your joke about old people.
So my dad's old.
How old is he?
He's so old. He was on a game show when he was younger, and the grand prize was fire.
Oh!
Oh God, she's dead.
Yeah, but there's still 149 probably living people.
That was the comedy. Yeah, I took my dentures out for this. It's in case I had to boo.
Go get him. Go get
Terry,
him.
Terry, I'm literally killing out here.
You are.
Boo! More jokes.
Is it weird I'm on stage with you right now?
No. Okay. No, I love it. Your mom is so fat.
My mother is long dead.
Yeah, but she's fat.
Well, her corpse bloated.
Yeah, she's so fat that she uses gravy as a blood thinner.
My grandmother made it. It was great gravy. Oh, it takes me back when we used to have a pot roast.
Are you going
to
die or what? Jesus Christ.
I into the pot roast.
Two for two.
Nice.
Thanks.
More comedy, please. I'm an orderly that works here, and I'm young and fit.
Francis Johnson, come into the break room.
Okay, we're here.
Oh, hey, guys. What's going on?
Francis Johnson, somebody's been rooting through the refrigerator again looking for the best pot pies.
Yeah, that's me.
Francis?
Yeah, it's Francis.
Yeah. What are you going to do about it?
He's very picky about his pies.
I'm very picky about my pot pies.
Good. You're so cocky about doing things that are really socially unacceptable.
No, he explained it to me. I had an issue with it at first, but he explained it to me.
Well, okay, tell me exactly what he said, Johnson. Well,
I mean, if you're going to eat a pot pie, that's an investment.
Yeah, it's an investment in the future.
And
okay.
It's a mystery what's inside of those pies. What? So what he's been doing is he's been tearing tops off of pot pies.
Yeah.
And examining the contents and only eating the ones that he's completely
happy
with.
It's got chicken in there. Put it in my stomach. If it doesn't, just put the top back on, put it right back in
okay,
that freezer.
But seriously, like, some of us like to eat these Popeyes.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Like, I like...
Francis loves eating these
Popeyes. I love
Popeyes.
Them.
Okay, well, Blake likes to eat these Popeyes too. And Blake is really tired of...
I'm going to tell you a secret about Blake.
Okay.
No one cares about Blake.
Okay, now fuck you, Francis. Okay, I'm sorry to put it in words like that because it's really not appropriate for a supervisor to talk to an underling like that, but seriously, fuck you.
No, actually, he's right. Like, I didn't think so at first, but he explained his reasonings to me, and it totally makes sense. Nobody cares about Blake.
Yeah, if I see some in the freezer with the word Blake written on it, I'm like, oh, up for grabs. It's like the free square in bingo.
Okay, guys.
Yeah, I used to have respect for my supervisor, but no, Francis convinced me that
okay.
I was wrong.
No, you guys can try to make me cry, but it's not going to work. It's not going to work.
I don't have to do anything to make you cry.
Okay. Like, this is sort of reminding me of a time when, like, one of my grandparents died, so I'm crying about that. This has nothing to do with your bullying activities.
You're thinking about your dead grandma right now?
Yeah.
Corpse is probably bloating.
Super bloated right
She's
now.
She's probably super fat right now.
Yeah.
Why won't you guys accept me as one of you? Why do you keep picking on me? Is it because of my height?
No, well, you see, Francis explained this to me earlier. Okay. It totally makes sense. Well, it's really just a hierarchical structure
system. Okay, now this time I want to hear from Francis this time.
Well, like I was telling, it's like a hierarchical thing. Like, okay. Like you're a position of authority, right?
Right. Yeah. And, so you should like me because it's my job.
Who likes authority? You ever watch a movie where it's all about respecting authority?
I was never allowed to watch movies when I was a child.
Are you still a child?
No, I'm a 43-year-old man.
Maybe you should try watching some movies, Blake.
Well, yeah, explain to him. He explained why movies are good to me earlier. Let him have it.
Yeah, well, you see, movies let you experience things that you wouldn't normally experience in your everyday life.
Like sex?
Yeah, sex is one of them. That's like an entire genre of movie.
I've never gotten to experience sex.
Do you have the internet, Blake?
No.
Here's what you should do. Go to your office.
It wasn't around when I was a kid.
We're not talking about your kid. You're an adult now. You can do whatever you want. Go to your office. Go onto the company computer.
Right? Isn't this mind-blowing?
Just go onto, like, Google and just type in sex.
He is so convincing.
His arguments are flawless.
They're perfect. You're like a master debater.
Anyway,
that's like straight road hack right there.
Well, this would be your bedroom. It used to be my brother-in-law's, but mm-hmm. he moved out. Mm-hmm. And now I just, I can't afford the whole place myself. And really, who needs this many rooms? So this would be you.
I would like to rent it. But before I do, I just needed to let you know that I'm not going to be coming alone. I also have a professional baby holder to come with me.
Hey, guys. Am I late?
No. Donald, this is Mrs. Chamberlain.
Hi,
Mrs. Chamberlain. Donald. This is Donald.
Hi, Donald. To meet you.
Hi. Donald holds my baby for me.
Yeah, it's great. I got real shaky hands, and the baby just quiets down. Yeah.
This is a full time position.
Yeah. I just basically stand around and I just wait, and if the baby gets put in my arms, boom, I'm
Speaking
on.
Speaking of which, Donald here.
Oh Christ! Yeah, here we go.
Wow. Oof. I didn't see know the way, that was a see career the way
I just,
path.
I just shake like an old man easing into a bath. You see that?
That seems soothing.
Yeah.
Like a massaging chair.
It's like I don't even have to put you don't even have to put a quarter in me.
you never hold.
That's his line. Don't worry.
She pays me a lot more. Don't worry about it.
You don't ever hold middle-aged women who are widowed, do you?
Do you pay him for 24-hour day care?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm overstepping my bounds.
I have a non-compete clause in my contract, so I mean.
Oh, okay. No. Okay. Well, I mean, so you'd just basically I'm just, be I'm just, subletting. I'm just saying.
Cut to the middle of the night that night.
Donald?
Yeah.
Donald, are you awake?
I am.
Donald. Donald, it's me, Mrs. Chamberlain.
What is it?
Are you holding a baby right now? Are you holding a baby?
I am, but I don't have to
you
be.
You got two arms?
I got two arms, but I could hold someone else.
Donald, it's been so long since I've been held.
I can tell.
Hold me.
Let me just put this baby down.
Hold me like a baby.
Okay.
Hold me. Hold me like a baby.
Climb up into my arms.
Donald?
No, it's fine.
It's so dark in here, I can't see anything.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine.
Where?
Where's Richard, my baby?
Safely in my arms.
Wow, goo 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 gaga.
Oh, that sounds just like him. Okay, I'm just gonna go back to sleep.
Oh, that was close.
That was so close.
Maybe we shouldn't do that in this room.
No, it was thrilling.
It was, wasn't it?
It was such a turn on.
What?
It was such a turn on.
What?
It was such a turn on.
Oh, is that what?
Donald, I'm sorry. Did I just hear my baby say his first words?
Goo 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 gaga.
Yeah. Can I hear him say it one more time?
Yeah, fucking do it. Turn on.
Oh, he just said turn on. Does he want me to turn on the lights?
No, don't. Don't turn.
Wah, no, wah.
Oh, no. Okay.
He knows no now, too.
I'm just going to go back to bed, then.
Okay, just keep sleeping.
Shh. My God, that was so... I am gushing wet right now.
I didn't know this was a sex thing. I thought you were just tense.
Kick the baby.
No.
Kick
I'm
the
not
baby.
Gonna...
No, there's only one baby in for your arms now. Kick the baby.
God.
Oh my God, that was too loud.
God, I don't want to do
step
this.
Step on its neck. Step on its neck.
Oh.
Well, I'm the baby now.
I'm not comfortable arms. With what's going on right now.
Hold me. I'm shaking arms. I'm going to step on the baby's throat just a little bit.
No, don't step. No, don't step. No. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, this is such a turn on to me. God
damn it.
Tell him. Yeah, heard some weird noises.
Don't worry about it. It's cool.
Are you sure?
Everything's great.
Why does your voice sound so strained?
I think your baby's gaining weight.
Do you have an erection? What? It sounds like you have an erection voice.
Nope. Zero erections.
Wow, he's hot flaccid. Wow.
See?
Wow, that's amazing. I'm going to have to explore my baby's amazing vocabulary in the morning.
Nope.
Okay, I'm going back to sleep now.
Okay, great. Oh my God, get off the goddamn baby.
Oh, you think we should have sex right on?
No, don't.
Jenny?
We're not having sex.
Let's have sex on Jenny.
No, we're not. We're having no sex. Get out of here. Just get out of here, man.
No, this is the only way I'll ever come.
All right, okay. If we just do it.
It's been so long.
If we just do it real quick, will you leave?
It's been so long, Donald.
I can tell.
Fuck me on this girl. Fuck me on this mother.
Okay, fine, but you have to leave as soon as we're done.
She's a milfo, a mother I'd like to fuck on.
Okay. Alright, okay, yeah, just bang.
I'm a blanket. I'm a blanket.
Everything's fine.
Is he having sex on top of me?
No. Why would that? Come on. That'd be super weird.
No, you're right. That would be
warmth. I'm a blanket.
Oh, it's just a blanket.
It's just a blanket.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm going back to sleep.
All right, okay. Are you almost there? Jesus Christ. Okay, yeah. You done?
Okay, I'll be in my room.
Okay, yeah, just. Oh, wow, man. $8 an hour, huh?
Donald, I heard that. You just complained about your paycheck. You are fucking fired.
Ah, jeez.
I'm one of those improvisers that just thinks that you have to be shocking to be funny.
You are road hack.
I am so road hack. Next up, Pat!
And that's our show. Thank you to Pat Sussmilch.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you for being on the show. So Pat, where are you playing coming up?
I will be doing some shows at the Comedy Exposition in Chicago. It's a fun festival. It's the second year that it's happening. I'm really excited for it. If you want more details, go to my website, patsusmilch.com, patsusmilch, and hopefully my calendar will be updated by the time you look at it.
Sweet. I know what you're doing tonight.
Probably nothing.
Yeah, probably nothing. Probably not.
Probably still playing Tomb Raider, honestly.
Yeah, it's a good game.
It's good. It's a great game. Yeah. I recommend it.
Yeah, and so quick plug for Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Philip, what's going on in your world?
The next local music scene show at the Bryant Lake Bowl will be Saturday, July 18th, 10 p.m. at Bryant Lake Bowl. Our musical guest is The Drug Budget. It's a huge group, but we're just having a small, tiny sliver of it.
Which sliver?
I believe the singer and a guitarist and a saxophonist.
No kazoo player?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't think Robert Phones is coming.
That's who I was talking
about. He's a stand-up comedian who's in the group.
Gotcha. And then Drew and Matt are going to be doing 9:30s on Fridays at Huge, starting in July, but all through July and August, switching up to a 45-minute set, so that's going to be different and new and should be a good time.
All July and August?
All July and August. So.
I'll come to one.
Sweet.
I'll do it.
Nice.
I'll be there.
So, motherfuckers should come out and check us out. It should be fun.
Non-motherfuckers can come too, right?
Eh.
Okay.
People that aren't into MILFOs.
MILFOs.
So,
you started a fetish. People are going to listen to that. You know what? I think I'm into that.
Yeah.
Or they always knew they were into it, but never had a
acronym for it.
Yeah. Or yeah.
There's a word for what I am.
So, Philip, how can people get a hold of us?
On the internet. They can send us an email at nextatbatpodcast@gmail.com. Put us a comment.
Put us a comment.
put us a comment on facebook.com/nextatbat. And then, hey, we're not the only other great podcast on Noise Picnic. You should listen to some other ones.
Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe to our podcast. Rate and review. Use your words. Words are good for you. They're nutritious and healthy. Tune in next week when we're going to have a brand new guest on. But until then, as always, keep asking questions, Minnesota.